Invincible Pals, and welcome back to Invincible Pod, probably the greatest podcast about the Amazon original series Invincible. My name is James.
I'm Ralph.
And today we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 4, Neil Armstrong, Eat Your Heart Out. Another episode title that isn't actually a line from the show. It feels like it should be dialogue, but it's not.
Right, and I don't know where the titles are coming from. But they're fine.
It could just be anyone in the writer's room just going,
Okay, so there's this episode, I feel like, is the most like the comic as far as like tone. We get that classic Kirkman Invincible setting up shit. Like,
yeah.
So, like, just the opening scene, I'm like, okay, cool. This is
yeah,
neat.
It's sort of like a long, prolonged cold open of Egypt or somewhere sort of out that way.
Yeah.
And it's the setup to like just any like mummy movie, isn't it?
Right. Right. And what's funny is I don't remember this from the book.
No.
But it's that classic Kirkman where he literally opens a door and then closes it to save for later.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Or not. Like, I could see it going, like, this whole thing just being for nothing. Like, literally. So, you've got, like, the stereotypical bad guy goes in to open up this mummy's tomb. And then as he's, like, shambling out, all taken over and possessed, like, Mark and Nolan are flying over. And Mark is flying too low, so he's kicked up the sand and he closes the door on him.
Right.
It's, like, a complete, like, they've subverted it by, like, they've taken out the bad guy without even realizing what they were doing.
But it opens itself up for future.
Oh yeah,
stories.
They've got this ancient Egyptian mummy like that they could use whenever they want to.
Do you think it'll show up again in season one?
No.
You don't think so?
I think that this is just a Kirkman gag of, hey, look, you thought we were setting up this week's bad guy. We weren't.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those things where, like, in a couple months, the casual viewers are going to be like, hey, wait a second, what happened to that mummy?
Yeah, like at the end of the season when people, like, go back and rewatch all these episodes again, and they'll be like, that never pays off.
That was one of my favorite things in the book. If you read the monthlies, they have the Invincipals section in the back where Kirkman answers and fields questions, and there's, you know, the editor fields questions and stuff. It's the letter section. And I remember the one where he said that there were a couple of threads he started and forgot to finish. And I'm wondering if with the show he wants to complete those threads.
I was watching an interview with him yesterday, and it was on Kind of Funny, so Greg Miller and Tim Gettys and those guys, and like they've known Robert for a while, but this is the first time they've been able to get him on, and they've been big fans and like pushing the show. They've been pushing the books for years. They've been trying to get their audience to read the books, and they were sort of talking about Kirkman's plans and like, does he want to do like the whole run of the comics? And he's like, well, ideally, of course, I'd love to.
Right.
And he's like, in a dream scenario, we'd go beyond the books. We'd tell that story and then we'd keep going. He's like, If this is as successful as Walking Dead was for him, like that's what he would like to do. He would like to keep the story going, but like changing stuff up.
Right.
Which,
and you don't know you don't know where the story ends.
No, I don't. I've got a rough idea, but I don't know whether I've got at least two trades worth that I haven't read or like at all. Probably more.
I can't believe you started over again.
I'm enjoying it more because I'm like I'm a bit ahead of where the show is, but like then the show does an episode like this where it does like a few issues worth of story
right
in one, and it's like it catches me back up, and then I'm like man,
like I mean, I guess we don't really talk about the book, but I wish I could talk to you about more, but it's fine. Okay, so speaking of the book, like, and Kirkman knows where everything is going, and the readers know where everything is going, and then I feel like it's late being laid on so thick that it's obvious to everybody, but I don't know if it's just because I've read the book of what's coming.
I See, I'm in the same boat, but I think, I mean, they're flat out saying it at times. Like,
Right.
so we're talking about Nolan.
Right.
Like, and like Cecil is now, because we've been introduced to Cecil earlier than we were in the book, like he suspects Nolan for the murders of the Guardians.
Right.
Damien, obviously, Damien Darkblood has been on the case, and he's been snooping hard around
Right.
like Mark, Debbie, and everyone. Like, I mean, he hasn't really talked to Mark all that much, but like he's talked to everyone else involved or
Right.
related to it.
Dude, the worst, the most, the roughest scene to go through in this episode and probably of this series up to this point is Nolan convincing Debbie that he's innocent. It was
It's
brutal. It
and
was
it's
so brutal.
and even like when later on when they're in Rome and he's just like, do you
Right.
trust me? This has got to be us. This is us. It's
Oh my
you, me, and
God.
Mark against the world, essentially. And like the Rome is being attacked by a dragon, and he's just
Right.
like, look at me. Like, do you trust me? This is us. And it's like Debbie's freaking out. She's like, I trust you. Now can you go and deal with that? He's like, nah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh damn. And this is just after he'd like shown some sympathy for the guy dressed up as Caesar and everything. It's like,
Right.
there's all these things.
I feel like it makes me want to believe the mind control theory that Immortal had, and it's like the way Kirkman works, it's making me as a reader doubt that.
And also the fact that in this episode we've seen something that can control a mind or at least imitate another person. Like we're
Right.
introduced to the sequids in this episode from
Right.
Mars. So, I mean, we assume that that's the first one that's made its way to Earth, but we don't know for sure. They could have come over on like a probe
Right.
or something.
Right.
So who knows? It's
Right. So could there
interesting.
be a sequid out there that has can't
Taken
penetrate
over Nolan.
Viltrumite? But I mean, for those of you who read the book, obviously we've seen Nolan kill the Guardians of the Globe. We saw that in the show, and I'm gonna say according to the book, it's not mind control. I'm gonna let people know it's not mind control.
Yeah, I mean we're teasing options of what it could be, but like
And sort of his attitude since then has been kind of led us to believe that he is kind of not a good guy. But again, could that be the mind control? So I'm
well, that's it.
not, I like that Kirkman and company are able to put doubt in my mind.
And if there's one writer out there that makes you go, I know this story already, but if they're going to change it up, I mean, Kirkman is the one writer who I would think who would just throw a curveball and just be like, you thought you knew where this was going. You didn't.
Even the fans, like even with that trailer, like the second trailer, where we're like, oh, they're showing too much of Nolan being, evil. I'm like, that's for the fans. Like only the fans know what's really going on. But
I think we talked about it, didn't we?
now that we're getting deeper into the show, we're halfway there.
God, yeah, that's insane.
I don't know. I
But
kind of.
there's lots, like even when Mark and Nolan are at top of Everest, like right at the start of
Right.
the episode, the way that Nolan is talking about humans and how like,
Right.
it's a beautiful place. It's a shame that you're so dead set on fucking it up.
Right.
And it's like he's showing contempt for humans, and then he keeps on talking, and Debbie even mentions it. It's like, you keep on talking about home, you keep on talking about Viltrum.
Right.
Like, what has brought this up all of a sudden? And
Yeah.
like he says that it's Mark getting his powers and he wants him to know his history and his people and stuff like that, which I get. I mean it's an immigrant story, isn't it? Essentially, it's like
Right.
you know your lineage, but we know what that means.
Yeah.
And no one else does because he's never told Debbie about his people or what he's there for, other than, to be
Right.
this great protector.
Right. It's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm excited. I don't know if I would be happy if they deviated from the books. I feel like they can't with this.
Not too much. Like
Kirkman
they can
can't
get
do
there in a
that.
different way. I mean, they already are getting there in a different way, but I think they're setting it up so much that it kind of has to go to the same point.
Yeah, I feel, yeah.
I'm thinking back to those trailers as well. We've already seen something in one of those trailers.
What got me into the book to begin with is, you know, it was a great book. But as soon as we found out Nolan's relationship with Earth, that is when it really grabbed me, and I could not stop reading. So hopefully Kirkman leaves the comic book story intact, because that's what makes Invincible Invincible. If he finds some other way to you know, change up the story and keep it going, then that's cool. But man, it's exciting to watch.
It really is. And it's one of those things that, like, they've got this cast, and this cast, like, I think we should just work on the assumption that we're getting two or three seasons out of this, at least.
I hope so.
I really, really hope so. But, like, you don't cast J.K. Simmons for him to not be a major player throughout.
Right.
Like, there are certain things that happen in the show where, you know, characters will drop in and drop out. All sorts of different characters.
Especially this major episode.
Major characters and, like, just bit players. Like, we haven't seen Alan the Alien since episode two, but, right. Like, he's a major part of this core, like, cast. He's on all the posters. Whenever you see something about Invincible, Alan the Alien's always there.
I want to say, like, if you're watching this on YouTube, which you should, subscribe to us on YouTube, the image in the background is, like, I want to say it's Mark, Nolan, and Alan. Yeah.
Like, and if you're going to, like, have three, I mean, I'd say they're sort of three of maybe five main characters in the entire series. And so, yeah, but I mean, we haven't seen him since. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to be coming back. It doesn't mean that he's not important to this story.
Right. He'll definitely come back this season.
I think he has to. What did you think about date night? Like, Mark and Amber go out on their first date. They're going quote unquote out in a very typical, like, teenager date fashion.
Right. It was all right. It was, I enjoyed it. I liked that the date was kind of a weird, unique, setting. I liked
that. Yeah, it was like a farmer's market type situation. Like, they're going to a craft fair. It made me really miss going outside and doing stuff. Like, no joke. I was watching it this morning and I was just like, man, I miss walking around and, like, just picking stuff up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they just reopened. I don't know if you've heard of Amoeba Records, huge record store in Hollywood, shut down.
Yeah.
And then they just reopened one this
week.
On
the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been.
They just reopened another location this week, and I'm like, man, I don't want to go so bad. I get my second vaccination in 1 week. I get to go out. But watching that scene, I'm like, oh man, not even the cartoons have to wear masks. Oh man.
Obviously it's animation, so they don't need to worry about that sort of thing. And it's a fictional world, so it's not like sitcoms where, you know, this current season where everyone's wearing masks. But like, it's just, it makes it feel weird because, like, everything for the last year and a half has been just masked up.
Yeah.
Weird, it was cool. It just made me nostalgic for going out and being able to do stuff like that.
I like that the setting.
How awkward Mark was.
Yeah,
like, he's nervous, he's awkward, and I mean Amber was too as well, to a point. Like, her, like, constantly mentioning her trip to the Philippines was very relatable, because it's like at 17, like, she's taking this trip, she's done this amazing thing, like going to the Philippines and whatnot, and so, like, whenever they're talking about something, it's, she sort of brings it back to that.
Right.
And it just felt really natural, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, when you're a kid, that kind of thing is a huge deal.
Absolutely. Any big trip that you take, like, sticks with you.
I remember every detail from a road trip from, like, 1991, 1990, that we took to, like, Washington.
Yeah.
But I went to Ireland 2 years ago, and I remember some of it.
I'm the same way, like...
Thank God for cell phones, because I could take the pictures and store away those memories. But I like that we did get the setting lend itself to her backstory, kind of let us know more of who she is, how she's a hero in her own right by going out and traveling and helping people.
Definitely. And it gives Mark the great, like, thing, sort of an excuse that he uses when he has to go to Mars later on. He's like, I was inspired by you. You make me want to be a better person.
Right.
I'm going to go and help some people. And, you know, he doesn't have much of an answer because he's watching the countdown to the launch on the TV in the background, which I loved. I thought that was such a good literally a ticking time bomb sort of thing on the scene.
Yeah.
He's like, I really got to go. But I will see you in 2 weeks.
I like that it kind of added a sort of a dramatic tension.
Because yeah, there was some tension to it.
You're like, is he just going to blurt it out?
Yeah.
Like, he has to convince her why he's leaving in, like, a minute. And the best way to convince her is to just fly away.
Yeah, show her. It's like, I'm a superhero. Yeah. I'm invincible. I got to go help those guys that you're watching on TV.
Right.
But, yeah, and it comes just after the conversation with Eve at school where she's saying, like, dating normal people sucks. It's hard work because, you know, you do have to lie to them. Like,
but he throws in the jab of
Yeah, like, that wasn't cool.
it was pretty
bad. And, yeah, so by sort of saying that, you know, dating Rex didn't go any better.
Right.
But, yeah, she, being the supportive friend that she is at this point, she's like, look, if you're serious about her, then you can tell her. But you just got to make sure that you are, like, dead set on doing that, because once that cat's out of the bag, like, it can't get put back in.
Right. I mean, it's, we kind of learned that lesson, or we assumed, in one of the first three episodes, I think it was episode two, where she seemingly had pictures of what's his name? Will?
Right.
No.
Oh, Will. yeah, William, yeah.
No, who's the bully?
Todd.
Todd. So, if you, that sets up the fact that, you know, when you date in high school, you may end up with pictures of your ex that no one should see. And then
God,
that sets up.
You? Well, I know I am. Like, I'm glad that there wasn't cell phone cameras when I was at school.
Right. Well, but it just shows you, like, okay, that's one thing. But if your ex is a superhero, like, that's like a whole nother level. That's a whole nother, like, not just from a blackmail standpoint, but just danger
as well as everything else. Like,
I don't know how
you've got all the normal relationship drama and then all of that on top.
And even like someone like Debbie, who has done this for over 20 years, we learned that they've been together a long time. Like, she's just coming to terms with this and being married to a superhero. But it just goes to show you, like, even Omni-Man isn't immune to relationship issues.
Definitely. Like, and we see in this episode, like, after Debbie has her conversation with Olga, that, you know, she's starting to have doubts about what Nolan is saying. Like, she's, for the first time, not fully buying 100% of what he says.
Right. And on top of that, he's acting strange. He's kind of dismissing her and calling her a drunk, or calling it's a ton of red flags.
It's not cool. And like, Debbie's smart enough that she can see the behavior,
but
because it's new to her, she's trying to give him the benefit of the doubt,
right?
And that's sort of a lot of what the conversation is. I like that the trip to Rome didn't like instantly fix everything. She's like, this is lovely, I'm glad that we came,
right?
But not right yet. We're
even
not,
the fact that she says, even the fact that she says, you never make reservations.
Yeah.
Is saying, like, something doing is something up, nice, something's even, different, like, it's different with you.
Yeah. Like, and he wouldn't, like, there's no way that he would normally sit there while there's an attack happening behind. He'd be like, I'll be back, but I got to go deal with this. Like, would be, I would
think.
Because
he could take care of it in a second.
It's nothing to him. Yeah.
I was going to say, he could throw him into space, which... By the way, another Kirkman thing.
Yep.
When the shuttle takes off and
we see biplane.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Because, who was it who threw him into space? It wasn't Mark, was it?
Immortal, I think.
It was Immortal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Nothing. Go on. I was thinking about Immortal again. I went back and looked, and it is one panel. It's just one panel that implies Immortals' history that gets me very excited. And it's tied into the episode 3. And
if you follow our socials, you got a bit of a clue on it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth a watch. And it's one of those things that, even if they don't touch on it this season, like, they've implied it enough for people like you who are eagle-eyed and spotted out straight away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The decapitation.
Yeah. What else do we have this? Well, I mean, we haven't really talked about Mars. We should probably talk about Mark going to Mars.
The Martians and the Sequids.
Yeah.
I remember, I vaguely remember the Sequids from the book, but I don't remember this storyline kind of unfolding like this. Is it pretty accurate or is
They
it different?
came over from Mars. Yeah, they were on Mars, and the Martians were scared of them. Like, they were trying to avoid them, and it played out pretty similarly. I read that issue about a week or so ago. Like, even to the point where the one astronaut sees Mark, like, in this, it's on top of the cliff. In the book, he's on top of the shuttle, and like, he's just a bit paranoid and it's like, what's going on?
I feel like the astronauts should have been at least briefed on Martians, because like Cecil said, it's like, where do you think Martian Man came from?
That's it. Like, it's one of those things that when Mark says, it's like, wait, there's Martians? He's like, well, yeah. Like, where do you think he came from? That's not just a clever name.
So you
I
think
think,
that
yeah,
the
maybe
they would
just like a, hey, there shouldn't be any problems, but they are there. But who knows? As he said, like, Earth needs a win. Maybe they didn't want to complicate things any more than it already was. The music
Mark.
score that we got as soon as they like landed on Mars and they're starting to do their work reminded me so much of The Martian, the film The Martian.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, have you not?
No, I need
Like,
to see
just
it.
there's sort of this ethereal sort of like jingle jangle is the
Like
best way I
it's,
can describe it.
but that's like what's great about Invincible is that it takes it
It's a real
like
subtle
blatantly
nod in
steals
there.
from different things. Like obviously, was it, you said it was Biplane is the character
Yeah, I
name?
think that was the
Is
character name, but
100% the Vulture.
like, in everything about him looks like,
So using doing that with the music, I didn't notice because I haven't seen The Martian, but I did notice the music a little bit more this episode. We get a couple more needle drops, which are great, and then
they are loving using Run the Jewels. Like, there's, I think there was at least two tracks with Killer Mike on there today, and it was, yeah, it's good. It works, and it's like, again, like, if Run the Jewels ends up being sort of the soundtrack for the Mauler Twins, then I'm into it. Because it, like, there's twice now that we've heard tracks from them with scenes with the Maulers, whether it be one Mauler or two Maulers. But it works. Like, it gives them their own sort of theme and feel.
Another thread that was set up was the creation of a second Mauler twin.
Yeah, or another one at least. And created out of bergamot patties,
Is
which
that,
is
I don't remember that from the
interesting.
book. I don't remember how we saw the Maulers get created in the book, but
No, I
I
don't
like
remember.
this whole sequence where
Felt very
like,
Jurassic Park.
because he looks like a very big, like the Mauler twins look like brutes, but this one, the one that we have, which we're assuming is the first one, maybe not, definitely smart. Like for him to construct this stuff, I'm sure he's done it before,
We
but
saw that. I mean, we saw a lot more of that in the books, and I'm glad that they're doing it in the show. It's like, they are big, brutish guys, and they're like, we see that to even draw some blood, he has to use like a big industrial drill
oh
sort of thing.
yeah.
And it's brutal, but it's like, okay, cool. But that's not their real power. Like, their power is their intelligence. They are crazy smart.
And I do like that they he goes in, looks in the microscope and sees, looks for that specific cell to replicate, and just that whole process. But yeah, the bergamot patties made me laugh because I thought like, okay, he needs to, like, it's one thing to grow something, but it needs some sort of living organic tissue, and I think it's funny that
They
it was
use
made
that.
of frozen bergamot patties. Like it's such a great callback. Like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff you love.
So we got that thread, and then another one that was set up briefly last time, but more so this episode a little bit, is what closes out the show with Robot. So when they get to the new Guardians HQ, he takes a sample of Rex's blood. We don't know what for at this point. Like, we think he's just being a little bit like, not threatening, but like saying, hey, look, I'm the leader, stop being a dick to your teammates. But then we find out at the end of the episode that no, he's got some plans with that blood, but we don't know what it is yet. And we see the sort of the thing in the tube
Right, which I believe the thing in the tube comes way later in the comics.
It's way, way later. Like, and there's
like one of the last. I don't know, like, gosh, one of the last story arcs. It's got to be like maybe the third to last story arc or something.
Okay, like I've seen it. I know something to do with it, so it might not be quite that.
It just feels like it's so late.
It's definitely further through. And also stuff with Rex. Like, there's stuff with Rex and Robot that comes up later on.
Right.
So it's interesting that they're doing all of this stuff. Like, even if it's just laying those very first foundations of these story threads, like, it's the benefit of doing this series when the book is already finished. So he can lay all of this stuff in there and just sort of seed it for future if they need to.
Right. And we got another scene between Monster Girl and Robot.
Yeah, Monster Girl really feels like the heart of this new team.
Yeah.
Like, they're using her in that way where, like, she's trying to make peace with Rex.
Right.
Just be like, we're cool, right? And he's like, yeah, okay, the other guys were kind of dicks and whatever.
I do like that shrinking Ray still seems to be out of the loop.
Yeah, she's a little bit. Definitely like the one who's a bit out of place. She's just kind of like, I guess I'm just here as well. Which is fun. Yeah. Like, just filling out the numbers essentially on the team.
Yeah. Right. Donald. Donald's the one that gets rid of Damian.
Yeah, Donald. He said,
I didn't think it would be you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first like major thing we see with Donald is when he's asking Cecil, like, why are you okay with Mark going on this trip to Mars? Because, like, the original plan was to send Nolan off.
Right.
So that they'd have some space so that they can investigate him for these murders. Mm-hmm. Cecil's okay with Mark going because he gets to sort of essentially test out the kid, see if he's A, up to snuff, and B, where his loyalties lie.
Right.
But yeah, then Damien Darkblood hasn't given up. He's convinced, like, he's full on convinced at this point that it was Nolan that did it, to the point where when Nolan confronts him, he's like, what are you gonna do, murder me like you murdered the rest of them?
God, that scene was great.
Yeah, like the threatening, like Nolan just in the shadows threatening.
Yeah, because after last episode I was like, okay, Damien's dead, he's done.
But instead, like, Nolan sees that as his way out. Like, he can pin it all on Damien Darkblood.
Right.
And get away with everything scot-free. Hopefully, in his mind, he can, anyway. But yeah, then later on, when Nolan and Debbie are in Rome, isn't it, I think? Damien goes back to the house. And he's snooping around. He's in the cupboard at some point. And then he comes back downstairs and sees who's there. And he takes him away, takes him presumably back to the Pentagon or something. And he's like, yeah, no, you're right. I know that you didn't do this. I know that you're being framed for this. But we kind of just got to go through the motions here.
We need you out of the way.
Yeah, you didn't listen to me. Like, we could have maybe worked on this together, but you just were dead set on doing this your own way. But I can't have that. He deals in shades of gray, not black and white.
I love that. Cecil and the Pentagon use all these incredible tech, and it's, you know, they have like cloaked soldiers and transporters and all kinds of crazy stuff. And as soon as Damien steps into that circle, it's awesome that they also have knowledge in magic.
Yes. And like, they know it's the whole Batman thing, isn't it? He's got a plan for everyone.
Right. And it cracked me up seeing Donald sitting there with a book, a candlestick, and a bell. And it's the way they set this up is so amazing, because it's like Damien already knows he's screwed. He's already stepped into the circle.
As soon as he steps, and he says,
I can't believe it was you that's going to do this to Donald. Yeah. And they go through the motions. Donald just starts reading the book. The candle's lit. Cecil decides he's just going to grab the bell to finish it off, and decides to listen to Damien Darkblood. And then as soon as he's done listening, he just rings the bell and that's it. Like, it's like a process that I feel like they've gone through before.
Yeah. And he even sort of says to Donald, he's like, he's not dead. Don't worry. He's not dead. He's just back in hell. Yeah. So, I mean, assume that maybe he'll be able to get back out, but who knows? Like, we know from other conversations so far in the season that, like, he's doing all of this to try and keep himself out of hell.
Okay, now my...
He's very much like a Hellboy representation in the cartoon, as opposed to just Rorschach. Straight up Rorschach. Yeah.
Right. I think I like the design in the book more.
I do too.
But, I mean, that's fine. Still like the character.
It's similar, but it's slightly different.
It's such a different... Yeah, it's a different look.
So in the... Like, this is his sort of like exit from the scene at the moment, possibly. Whereas, like, I was just reading in the book, like, it's quite a way after we get all the reveals about what happened to the Guardians. In the book... Damien Darkblood just shows back up at the Pentagon, goes to see Cecil and Donald, and he tells them everything. And they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, we know. We've dealt with all of that now." And he's like, "Herm," and then just sort of walks off, and that's it. Like, that's the last we see of Damien Darkblood, I think. And it's just like, okay, so he's sort of being dispatched without anything.
So I feel really dumb, but I didn't understand the ending of the episode. I wasn't quite sure. Did I miss something? Was there something he left behind?
See, I was watching. I went back and watched the scene earlier on, and they definitely focus on him being in the closet a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't notice him put anything down. Like, I was expecting him to like leave something but yeah, no, I didn't notice anything. And then at the very end, like, we linger on it and we hear him in the closet. It's weird. I felt, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one. Like, I was watching it and I had my curtains like wide open, so I had a bit of glare on my TV screen. And I was like, I've seen the episode before. I don't need to like close off the nice sunshine that we've got today.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh shit, is there something on the shelf that I'm missing? But
no, I only watched the once and I'm like, oh, I heard, you can hear the grunt.
He's there.
Yeah.
I assume, yeah.
But I was like looking for like something out of place, or maybe
or like his hat or some anything, like just a totem of him. Okay. I think that's kind of got to be what it is. It's like he's there. Maybe he can't be like in physical form or something. He can just sort of watch from hell.
Like, is there like a Ouija board or something in there?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows?
I could see Kirkman doing that.
Yeah, it could be anything. Could be anything. But yeah, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one who.
Okay, good. Because I felt really dumb. Because I was like, oh, cool. He's still, like, I understand what they were getting at. Like, he's not gone, and that's where he was. You know, earlier in the episode, I just couldn't physically see anything that I was supposed to see. So that's good to know. I'm sure.
It could have just been something like his breath coming out the, like, I couldn't see on my screen or something.
Right.
Like, just the cold breath that everyone else seems to get.
Let us know on Twitter or
anything
like that. Comment on YouTube. Because I felt like, oh man, should I even bring this up? How stupid I am. I didn't notice this. And I'm glad you didn't notice anything either, because I feel a little bit better about it. I feel after like years of watching Lost, I'm kind of an eagle eye viewer, and I'm like, I don't get it.
We're sort of trained by Lost, weren't we? Cool. Anything else from this episode?
It seems so jam packed, and I can't think of anything else. We did get another scene with Adam Eve, which is nice.
Nice one at the school. She's having a crisis of faith. Sort of, she's not sure if she wants to be a hero. She doesn't know if she wants to do the superhero thing on top of everything else. Some mention of her parents, who, like, again, that's a side story with Eve's parents.
Stevie, my wife, had asked me, she's like, does Adam Eve have family? And I said, oh, yeah, I think they mentioned it in the book. And I want to say it's not a great upbringing, if I remember right.
It's not the best relationship. I can't remember if it's with one or both of her parents, but I know for a fact that she definitely doesn't have a great relationship with her dad. But I can't remember. I think that was, it might have been in the main book, or if it might have just been in the Eve and Rex miniseries that they did.
Because that's what's funny about the show, is like, you forget that the teen team, or the new Guardians of the Globe, Rex Blood and Eve are still like high school age. I'm assuming Rex is also 17.
I mean he's no more than a year or two older than them, like, absolute.
So
I mean, they all are, I assume it. Other than Robot, like they were the teen team, so you
yeah,
know.
so it's funny, like you, yeah, Robot. Oh man, I love Robot. I can't wait for more Robot reveals. But yeah, you wonder about the parents because you only see these guys outside of, outside of school, or at school. So
And as much as they're jamming into these episodes, like there is only so much that they can do. So
you're
like
right.
that mention of her parents might be all we see of that relationship for at least for a while.
Right.
But who knows? We don't know. Maybe they'll just do an entire episode based on her and Rex's backstory.
Right. And then speaking of parents, with Nolan continuing to train Mark, like he's saying all the dad stuff that everybody wants to hear from their dad. It's always positive reinforcement and life lessons and stuff. But at the same time, I keep remembering what he did, and I'm like, oh, it makes me so frustrated.
Like, see, I'm hearing all of the good positive stuff, but then
Right.
everything that he says, like it's almost every conversation has something that makes you go, oh shit, you're not as virtuous as you seem. Like you have this darker side.
Right.
You're talking about Caesar being this great conqueror and how he's just now thought of as a joke and how like Viltrum and Viltrumites have, you know, they've propelled races into the future. They've helped
Right.
everyone as much as they can. It's like,
Yeah.
yep,
But
okay, Nolan.
that's the thing that's crazy is that so my dad left my mom when I was 17, so I'd be like roughly Mark's age. And listening to Nolan and you see these scenes with them together and he's putting up this front, it's like, oh my gosh, like this is like, did this happen to me? This is like,
Yeah,
did
it's
I not
weirdly,
realize?
weirdly
Right. And I'm like,
relatable.
oh my God, like it makes me mad. But then when I
Yeah.
see him helping Mark, I'm like, oh man, that would have been so ideal if I got more of that. But then I'm like, oh my God. So the show is
Well,
really like fucking with me.
that's the thing with Nolan, is like you really he does seem like he cares about his family. I
Yeah.
don't doesn't seem like he cares about much else. But he like the conflict is there. It's the Darth Vader thing in Return of the Jedi where it's like he the conflict is real. Like
Right.
he seems conflicted. He doesn't know whether he wants to be like full Viltrumite or whether or not he wants to be a loving husband and
Right.
father. Like he
Right.
says it to Debbie, he's like, I never expected to have a family. Like you changed everything.
Right.
And I think that's key. I think that's something that everyone should just pay attention to because I think that's one of the most important lines of dialogue
Right.
that we've had so far.
And what's nuts about the whole thing is it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Right?
He's
So,
got
like,
something with deeper family drama than like almost anything else on TV.
right. And I mean, I'm hoping, like, I feel like this show is groundbreaking. First of all, there aren't any sort of hour-long
Our
anime dramas or anything. And then it's serialized. And then it's tackling these themes. Like, I'm hoping, like, just because I want more seasons, I'm hoping this show goes on, but I'm
Yeah.
also hoping it's a success so that other companies are like, let's do this.
You can do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need to stick to that format or this format. Like we
Right.
work with whatever is best for the show.
Right. Like, let's say, like, Watchmen, for instance. Watchmen's an incredible comic series, mini series, graphic novel, whatever you want to call it. It's a comic book.
It was a comic book.
They said it was unfilmable. You couldn't make that. There was no way you can make that. Zack Snyder made a 4-hour movie. Not too bad.
Yeah,
Stuck to the
there's
book.
elements of it that are incredible, and you know, there's bits that I'm not a big fan of, but
People complain. People love it or complain, whatever. But that's the thing with switching mediums. I think if you were to take, how many episodes or issues of Watchmen were there? 12?
12.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 12.
HBO owns the rights. Let's do a true adaptation of Watchmen using the exact
Especially
same
after the
style.
success. After the success of the series, the
Right.
Damon Lindelof series from last was last year, wasn't it?
Right.
like that was incredible. So that told the future of that story. So now you could go back, because that series fell. It followed the comic book. It didn't follow the movies.
Right.
That was a sequel to the Alan Moore comic book.
Right.
So you could now go back, and if like, because Damon, I think, has said like he doesn't have any interest in doing any more of that.
Right.
So cool. Go back and do the comic book as it's told in the books.
Right, because
Dave Gibbons is involved. Like, he'll be really interested.
Have Dave Gibbons do the Corey Walker role, do the character designs for the show. You can picture a Watchmen animated series done in this style, and I feel like that's why I want this show to succeed. To open the eyes and show other companies, like, hey, listen, this is a thing you can do with your comic properties, and you can use. I mean, you could do a one-for-one adaptation of Watchmen using all of Alan Moore's dialogue and words and just go for it. Use that amazing color palette.
Like, I'm just looking at my shelf now, and the other one that I think this sets up the possibility of that happening is Saga, Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples' Saga, which I've been pushing that on people since it first started, and it's like one of my absolute favorite series. I think that would be unfilmable as a live action thing. I don't want to see it as a live action. I've got no interest in ever seeing a live action version of Saga, because the designs and the concepts and stuff are so out there that it wouldn't look right. But you use her style, art style.
Fiona Staples in the Corey Walker role, designing the characters for the 100%. Animated version. And the thing is, it's like, I feel like with Amazon Prime working with Kirkman and Invincible and doing this book that was Image book, I guarantee you Brian K. Vaughan is.
Oh, and we know that BKV has worked in TV plenty as well. Like, he's got ins. He knows. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's got ins. He's got a lot of people that he knows. Like, it would be great. It would be awesome.
I'm hoping the show does well enough. I'm hoping Amazon Prime is 100% in on this Invincible thing. It seems like they are. I don't know what the numbers are like.
I don't, like, again, this came up on that interview that I was watching with him yesterday, and he was saying, like, he doesn't have exact figures, but from everything that he's heard, it's very positive.
Good.
So, like, he's not like, please watch my show, please watch my show, please watch my show, which he would probably be doing if it was struggling. He's like, watch my show. Like, I'm happy with what we've got. Like, I'm confident in the show and the quality. That filled me with a lot of confidence.
I really want Saga now. I really want Saga. I mean,
Saga and Chew, I think, are two other.
Oh, Chew's, like, great too.
Yeah, I mean, that was meant to be an animated. They were meant to be doing an animated series of that, or at least a pilot. That was
They got Ken Leung to do the voice.
Yeah, Ken Leung was gonna be Tony Chew.
That's, Well, listen, I feel like Invincible's like a jumping off point, and it's got, I mean,
Ken Leung and Josh Holloway, that's your leads for Chew, please. Right.
This Invincible show is amazing. It's well written. Yeah. It follows the books, and it hopefully opens the doors for more. Yeah. Cause I can 100% picture Saga.
Yeah.
And then if we get Saga, we can get Chew. And if we get Chew, we can get... Let Eric Larson do a Savage Dragon show for crying
out loud. Oh, man, that'd be amazing. Meanwhile, a Standing Wolfman's being worked on by Kirkman and his team.
Right. But I want this to be make so many waves that DC and Marvel are like, okay. I don't need the OMAC MODOK series? I don't need that. I want this. This is what I want. Ultimately, I'm just saying, I want Warner Brothers to get to the point where they do Geoff Johns' run of Green Lantern in a serialized TV show. Because
It's such a great run.
Right, like, you could do 5 seasons.
Yeah,
and do it really good.
It's like, how have they not been able to do that in any format yet, other than comics? Like, it's a blockbuster movie, or set up like, or a trilogy.
Right.
Yeah, it's there.
All
right. Cool. Right. I don't think I've got anything else about the state of comic book adaptions.
Everybody visit invincipod.com. go to our YouTube. That's the one I'm really focusing on now. I want people to sign up for that, mostly so we can get the URL. But the way, like with every episode that we do, the page looks more and more cool. Like just seeing the artwork pop up and have it laid out all nice. And you'll also get stuff that I've been saving from other parts of the Invincible community. I might even do just a whole playlist of reaction videos because I've been watching those.
I watched one that you'd linked on Twitter the other day, and it was great.
Were just devastated, and they were like speechless.
It was so good.
Yeah, I watched another one. I think they're called Previewed. I'm not sure. Okay. But one guy had read the books, and the other guy hadn't read the books. So the guy who hadn't read the books, his jaw was open during the Guardians of the Globe scene, and the other guy was like, his eyes were wide open, but kept looking at the reaction. Like, can you believe this? Oh, so good.
Awesome. Like the work that you do back end, like with all the artwork and everything, it's amazing. And you get it all out so quick that I love it. So thank you, Ralph, for everything that you do on the show. I just come jump on the mic and chat shit for
I got to tell you, this first week was
it was a lot.
It was intense. Four episodes in 7 days. It's a little bit much usually for my schedule, but now
we're easy breezy for the rest of the season. Yes. Right. And until next week, I'm James.
I'm Ralph.
Keep watching the sky.
Bye.